So, hi and welcome to the Let's Talk Talent podcast. I'm Jo Taylor. I'm MD of Let's Talk Talent, and I'm really excited to be talking to Kirsty Groves-Knight. She and I are friends, but also I hugely admire her. She's a change maker and MD of a company called Shape. And together, we're going to be talking for the next sort of 15, 20 minutes on an area that's really passionate for both of us. And we sort of called it hashtag back to business, how we re-onboard people back into businesses post COVID-19. So welcome, everybody, and a big thank you and welcome to you, Kirsty.
Oh, hi, Jo. You're always so nice to me. I think the feeling's entirely mutual. I'm a big fan of yours too, so it's going to be a bit of a love fest today. So a little bit about me. I come from an innovation background, so I was an innovation consultant and really, really interested in the whole world of creativity and business until I wrote a book called I Wish I Worked There, which was all about how physical environments play a role. So Shape is all based in that. It's based around people, it's based around physical spaces, digital spaces, whatever those environments that we can design to make people do their best work.
So that sounds really interesting, doesn't it? Because when you think about at the moment, you know, the way that we sort of interact as professionals in the sort of and our audience and who'd be listening to this, it's going to be really varied, isn't it? It's going to be from HR leaders to space consultants to employee engagement, you know, internal comms, facilities people, because there really is, and we've talked about it in the past, an interlink, isn't there, between workplace environment and the culture of people. Do you agree, Kirsty?
Oh, 100%. I think you can't take those things in complete isolation. We are so impacted by the stuff that surrounds us from a biological level, neurological level, social level. And so it always perplexed me that we would kind of put people in these kind of sterile kind of environment and then expect them to perform really well, or we would just kind of just pay no attention to the physicality when we're at work, and then yet on the flip side, when we're at home or when we go on holiday or when we visit a cathedral, just we all know that these environments have an impact on us. So it's always really perplexed me that we've kind of put these things in buckets, and the facilities people wouldn't talk to the HR people and the comms people. And so one of the things that I am so passionate about is really having that kind of holistic conversation and bringing those different viewpoints together about what we can do to create the right environments to help people to thrive. So yeah, 100% agree with you.
Brilliant. So if we think about the exam question that we're going to try and help people solve in the next sort of 15, 20 minutes, I kind of wanted to start with a question to you, which was I saw a really interesting interview by Fortune magazine. They interviewed 500 CEOs recently about what they believe the impact will be to their business. And there was lots of quotes around, you know, recovery, people returning to work. And one of the things that really stood out to me was that this conversation about working from home, and that ultimately working from home works. We're not going to have that argument anymore that you can't do your job from home, because we've kind of proved it over the last 3.5 months. What do you think? Do you agree? Do you disagree? What are you seeing with your clients?
I think this is such an interesting area right now, because it's on one hand, you've got this proof in the pudding, if you like, that actually it can work. This thing that leaders were actually a little bit wary of, which was basically letting people go from out from under their gaze, you know, what are they doing if they're at home, you know, and of course we've had to survive in a situation where the majority of knowledge workers are working from home. So we've proven that the technology works, we've proven that people still work. In fact, we've seen that people have been working harder, and that's become a problem when they've been at home. So So that side is one thing, but it's also been a little bit convenient, I think, in that all of a sudden we know that next to people, the physical space, kind of rental costs and the operational costs of a building is the next biggest expense. So it stands to reason that when we've had all of these offices empty during lockdown, you know, the leadership team are saying, well, actually, do we need to be spending all this money on this space? And so there's been a very interesting debate going around about this. And I think I've seen a kind of a swing from some organization just saying, yes, everyone can work from home from now, and we're going to save a whole gazillion, in that regard. But actually, we've also seen a huge amount of stress come about. We've seen people really struggle with isolation. We've seen a lack of creative connection between people. So there are certain types of interactions that are really, really best done face to face. So I think it's really dangerous to just say, that everybody's going to start working from home from now on. What we can say, though, is that more people will be working more flexibly, which I think is a fantastic opportunity and one that we should be really exploring.
So how can we kind of continue that transformation?
Yeah, so I think that we are going to see a lot more people working from home, which is a great thing. But what's going to be really interesting is how we kind of continue the transformation. What do you think, Jo? How do you think we're going to continue it?
I think we're going to kind of continue the conversation by going back to basics of what does it mean to work in your organization. And I think a lot of clients that I'm talking to, so HR leaders, are starting to think about how they engage and enable their people in a different way. So when they first started, they were really in that sort of, what do we do? That sort of furlough, have we got enough money? Are we going to need to make people redundant? And now the conversation is really shifting to, what do we want people to feel? And how do we help people transition back in to the organization if it's going to be into a physical place? So what I've seen people do really well is to think about their leadership team and how they can build more autonomy and trust and make things more inclusive, rather than making it a conversation about, are you going to be in the office or out of the office? It's become much more of a macro question of, what does it mean to work in that organization, and where does physicality, the kind of environment, fit with our culture going forward? And so I'm really excited that I'm having new conversations with people, less about whether working from home is an option and whether we think, you know, they've got the right tech, but more about how they empower their people, how they create a leadership that's more visible, how they sort of trust, and then the enablers around technology become a part of it, but aren't the main driver, which before COVID, I wasn't seeing so much. So I'm really excited and hopeful that we can take this as a step forward, and that this will kind of give everybody a bit of a shot in the arm to move away from the obvious and more into the kind of inclusive wider societal questions.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think one of the things I've noticed that I find delightful is that conversation has twisted and shifted away from the, this is the way we've always done it, to, what do you need? What do you need in order to do the, you know, what you do and what this organization needs? And we've seen it at a kind of a societal level as well, where even the government, who was the Tories tend to be more capitalist and less social, and yet they have had a huge kind of drive towards making sure that people are happy, healthy, safe. And so I think we're in this really interesting era where people are actually really genuinely paying attention to the mental health of people and the performance levels of people. And so with that as a backdrop, I think you're absolutely right. Those conversations are at a much better level for actually working out what's needed, as opposed to just coming at it from a mechanical level. And so part of the way that we've been doing it at Shape is by taking, yes, by taking the immediate steps that organizations need to take to return back into the office. So really making sure that we're tying the, we're taking government guidance, but then tying that that to a position that the organization wants to take. So for example, we've just hit threat level 3, which basically means that there is still, you know, the virus is still in circulation. We still need to have some kind of measures in place, but we're relaxing them. Returning to the office is starting to become something that people are really talking about and thinking about. But and also the social distancing, which I hate the phrase, by the way, the physical distancing kind of measures at the moment is 2 meters. That may well drop. People are talking about that. But as an organization, do you want to do that? And that's the conversation that we're having, because, in fact, you might physically be able to drop that distance level down, but how's that going to make people feel, especially when you're just starting to transition back into the office? So that's kind of the immediate conversation that we're having. But broader than that, it is, though, it's also about beyond. Okay, so what are we doing to kind of really think beyond just getting back into the office? How do we want to treat people as employers? And then how are we going to use that to create the new types of environments that we think are going to really help people to do their best work?
I think you're right, because what before this conversation, before sort of the pandemic, people were looking at it very much from an individual organization perspective, weren't they? So, you know, what was, I don't know, Barclays doing versus a small SME? So it was very sort of internalized to the sector or the business or the size of your business. Now it's become so much more about everybody, and everyone's sort of on a level playing field, which I find really interesting from a kind of psychology perspective. So the heart that you talked about in terms of well-being, and, you know, working parents, and everyone's sort of, there's sort of been a leveling. So, you know, you kind of had, is that, so now the trick is not, in my mind, to look at it from a pure just organization perspective. It's more to look at it from an individual perspective. And what I'm trying to campaign for is much more about how we start to look at the different, you know, we've said this in the past, the tribes that work in your business. So do you, you know, there are going to be a group of people that don't want to come back into the office because they've really enjoyed having no commute. They've saved 2 or 3 hours of time and they've spent more time with their family. You know, for some people who are probably 20 years younger than me, are in a flat share or in a single studio, they want to come back into the office because they need the distance. It's, you know, mentally it's really hard. And there's other people that are really scared. And are perhaps not in getting that communication. So by looking at it from an individual perspective, you know, you talked about not putting people into boxes. You know, I think we can start to shift the conversation away from desks and desk setup, can't we? And, you know, physical distancing, like you said, and more into how we treat people as humans. We've got to go back to basics, haven't we? And think about how our leaders cope with this as much as the people that they're leading. What do you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I you know, the word when you were talking, Joe, the word human kind of popped into my head immediately, and you're absolutely right. And I think also, you know, it's there's an immediate there are immediate changes and considerations that we need to make right now, which are around treating people in a humane way and really supporting them in a lovely way. That, so for example, I mean, I read a couple of surveys that have been done over the last few months around, I think the CIPD did one, and there's and YouGov as well, and there's quite a few people, I think something like you know, 45-50% of people are anxious about going back to work. Mm. I've been doing that again with my clients, and it's much more up at the 70% people are concerned about getting back to work, or you know, 2/3 of people are kind of don't feel ready. So we've got that, okay, absolutely. But then going forward, then there is going to be, I think, a kind of a ripple effect or an afterglow of that, you know. So some people are going to want to or need to because they are in a vulnerable group to COVID. Of course they're going to need to continue to work from home. But beyond that, okay, you know, imagine a world, right, we've got a vaccine, you know, or the testing system is all up and working. What then? And I think, you know, you have people who are, yeah, for all sorts of diversity reasons, you know, neurodiversity, for example, you know, you have some people who find it incredibly distracting to be in an office environment, and yet they will still need, want, crave some form of social contact. So how do we work with those people in a much better way? Or do we welcome them into the work environment on a less regular basis, but in a way that it has, there's an environment that isn't kind of massively open plan and, you know, and super stimulating. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and as you say, you've got, you know, maybe it's an age thing right now where people are finding it difficult to work from home because they don't have the right office setup. But also people, there are people who will crave coming into the office because they do need that that kind of social stimulation. So, you know, without putting people in the kind of introverted, extroverted bucket, there are, you know, moments when we all have those kind of more or less introverted, introverted, extroverted kind of styles. And the type of work that we do requires those different environments. So all of these things are now on the table in a way that they weren't before. And I felt like I was campaigning for all of this, you know, over the last 10, 12 years. But now I think the conversation can really start to shift into kind of actually what are we going to do and how we're going to do it, which is incredibly exciting.
It is really exciting. And it feels to me as if, you know, one of the things to consider is that leadership role. Mm. Are you seeing any gap, or, you know, are there any tips and tricks that you can offer to leaders in how they might start to understand some of the questions that we're kind of posing? You know, how do you truly understand how your staff are feeling, for example, or is it actually affected you personally? Is there anything that you think that leadership can take from this going forward?
Oh yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of it being a personal thing as well. I think one of the best things that leaders can do is to acknowledge that we've all been going through a crisis, and there's a level of change that is happening, and so that, you know, that kind of as you said earlier, that leveling action is I think is number one, because that's when the kind of open conversation can start to happen. I think for me it's really genuinely listening to people and asking them what are the things that they not only in the short term that they need, but also longer term, you know, what are the things that they've learned. And I have done this with a couple of my clients whereby it's taken a little bit of bravery, but it's worked really, really well. And that is asking them to do a very short, you know, 1 minute or so video message to themselves for kind of 3 months in the future, because we have all gone through quite a significant personal and organizational challenge. So we are now in this moment where we can actually use our personal experience in order to understand other people's. I also do appreciate that we've had a very different experience, and that's why putting down your own and sharing that with others and listening to others is so important. So we've got this kind of strange kind of almost dichotomy between, we've all had this kind of crazy thing happen, but everybody's had a slightly different, well, not slightly, very varied experiences. So some as you said, come out of it going, yeah, I love working from home. Others are, you know, struggling with, you know, quadruple the workload, also trying to homeschool, and, you know, and finding it incredibly stressful because maybe some of the relationships at home are really strained. So I think the thing, to answer your question, it's really acknowledging that we've all gone through it, making it personal, and then just really listening and reflecting. And that's where I think that trust can be really developed. But not just that, you're taking the learnings out of it and then using those as foundations to say, okay, what do we actually want our new normal to look and feel like? And doing it from that perspective, I think that's where the opportunity lies.
I think you're right. I've been doing a lot of coaching over the last sort of 3.5 months. I think I've done about 70 coaching sessions with a range of businesses. And when I think about the kind of themes that have come out of it, you know, one has been very much about how do I develop my career, which is quite interesting in you know, when you think about it, you know, how are organizations thinking about, you know, retaining their talent in this time, as well as, you know, with the fact that they might have financial pressures. So one company at the moment has stopped all hiring or promotions and pay freezes and 20% pay cuts, whereas another company that we're working with has continued to recruit because they want to invest in the future. So number one was kind of career. The second was well-being. And that was, you know, sort of looking after themselves. And it's funny that you said that you've used that technique of people doing a video. I've used not video, but I've asked them to write a postcard to themselves. I remember we did that in a workshop together probably about a year ago with a client. And I actually have used it with a number of people who perhaps are struggling, but more from a leadership perspective. So, you know, them thinking about how they can lean in more, to kind of use the Sheryl Sandberg phrase, you know, how can they do that? And it's been quite interesting because I've coached both men and women, and how it's been quite a female trait to want to understand more about what they can do personally, and who've been really affected during this. I just thought that was quite interesting, kind of looking at it from a kind of, you know, inclusion or a diversity perspective. But the third piece of sort of theme that came out of coaching was around strategy and how they can stop thinking in the here and now and start planning. And one of the things that I've been saying to people is they've been saying, oh, you know, in the next year, I need to deliver this and this. And I said, well, no one knows what the next year is going to be. You know, if we were all be really rich, if we kind of all knew what the next year was going to be, and trying to get people to think in manageable chunks, which is quite different when you're coaching a leader who will always be thinking more strategically than operationally, but getting people to start to chunk it down into manageable, periods of time that they can control. It's kind of getting that control back has been quite a light bulb for me in how we're sort of helping people individually, but how that then, you know, with 70 people in one organization being coached, how that then multiplies across the organization.
So this sounds like there's some really interesting kind of themes that you've picked up across, you know, a really, really big sample of people. It's especially, you know, with coaching, you go quite deep, right? So
yeah.
What I'd like to hear from you actually, Joe, is how you think, you know, people can use, you know, some of that, and what are the things that people need to do, you know, not just consider, but how can we start to kind of use this stuff to move forward?
So I think there's kind of three things. I'm going to ask you the same in a minute. I know, so get your thinking back on. So I think number one is go back and think in 3-month intervals. Stop trying to think, you know, futurize. And we're not all futurists, so we don't know what the future. It is all up in the air. As you said, the government doesn't know. The sort of, you know, the World Health Organization doesn't know. In a way, we don't know what we don't know. So if you think about it in 3 month intervals, it's much easier to work out your role in it, your team's role in it, and the organization's role in it. So I think first of all, get it into manageable chunks, and for me 3 months is a good time frame. It's long enough for you to be thinking strategically, but short enough to be able to manage it. The second is around using your network for support. So it's one of the things that I've used a lot. It's how we got actually connected all those years ago when I was working at TalkTalk. But I've really found that personally I've used my network. So I've taken advantage of using my coach more, or, you know, with the way that and the organization I was talking about with the 70 coaching sessions, I've been talking to people about how they can get support, both personally and professionally, and sort of asking for it more. Mm-hmm. I think there's a feeling sometimes that we need to have all the answers as grown-ups and adults, and we don't. So asking for help and support, personally and professionally, I would definitely think is important. And number three, which kind of goes to the heart of, I suppose, my business, but also how I think, is to kind of keep it simple. You know, I'm a pretty simple soul. If you kind of dress it up, people can kind of know. So if you can't explain it in a sentence, then it's not simple enough. But make sure that it's whatever you're doing in regards to people, it's aligned to your business strategy, because the two have to be interlinked. If your people know what they're working towards, so the what and how they need to deliver, then you're going to make sure that you're bottom line, but you're also sustaining and enabling your people to give of their best. So they're the three things that I would do now. What about you?
I was listening to you, so I haven't had the chance to really think. I think my first one is linked to what you've just said, actually, and that is to do with the bigger strategy. And I think so as people and organizations are thinking about how they get back to business, you know, because of course we've been working anyway, so it's not back to work, it's about getting back to business and, you know, really kind of going up through the gears and firing on all cylinders. I think there's something around not dampening your ambition. So go back to whether you've had to rewrite your strategy, or kind of readjust it, but still stay quite ambitious about it and think about how you can connect the things that you need to do next with that. And I think that also links in with my second top tip, or things that I would kind of really get people to consider, and that is the voice. Using the voice of your organization, culture, because what I've seen a lot of is, and I'm thinking particularly, Joe, in terms of, what I'm kind of embroiled in right now. I'm completely immersed in helping people get back into their physical spaces and define what the kind of the blend might be going forward. What I've seen a lot of is, again, this kind of people forgetting what the actual physical spaces look like. So in a bid to be really health and safety conscious, they've completely forgotten about the social and emotional side of it. So I'm seeing organizations putting down red and black hazard tape everywhere to kind of, you know, mark out where people can and can't go so that they can keep people physically safe. But what that's doing is really kind of, at worst, it's raising cortisol levels when people go into the workplace, and you know they're not feeling kind of like they're in a place that they want to be. Another thing that they're doing is they're also missing an opportunity to use the voice of your organization through the signage, through the colors that you might use, through the kind of just consideration of the kind of the transitional things that you're going to put into your physical work environment as you welcome people back into the office, as opposed to just going through the motions. So I think really getting creative around how you welcome people back into the work environment, and using your kind of your brand voice, if you like, your employer brand voice. And then finally, I would say, I mean, we talked about this already, involve people, and that is really listen to them, ask them, get them involved and think about how you can do that. And that really ties into the whole way that I work. I come from a design thinking background. It's all about, you know, human centric. It's all about starting with people. So I would, don't be afraid to actually ask them, because you know we don't have all the answers, and it's great to be naive at this moment in time, because you can genuinely ask those questions.
Brilliant. So that's a good plan, isn't it, for everybody? And I really hope that you guys who are listening have not only got some inspiration but some ideas to kind of take forward. So all that remains is to say thank you for listening. Thank you for Kirsty for your wise words and wisdom on a Friday afternoon. And thank you, everybody.
Cheers, Joe.